from the boundless expanse of space, you know, reaching out to distant stars, to the really intricate vital systems of our own planet. Human ambition is just incredible, isn't it?
It really is. We're driven to push boundaries out there and right here.
Exactly. But at the same time, we've got to understand the air we breathe, the oceans, the ground beneath our feet. It feels like we're at this crossroads, you know, progress versus stewardship.
A huge question, yeah. Where should the focus actually lie going forward?
Welcome to Meteorology Matters. Today, we're navigating through some pretty significant shifts in policy and perspective. These touch both that ambitious space frontier and the vital science of our own changing climate.
We'll be exploring recent developments that really highlight different priorities, different ways of approaching these critical areas. It gives you a snapshot of where things stand.
Our mission today, as always on Meteorology Matters, is to help you cut through the noise, understand the core changes, and kind of grasp what they might mean down the line.
Think of it as your shortcut to getting informed on topics that might seem separate, but are actually surprisingly interconnected and really impactful.
Okay, let's get into it. We're looking at decisions that could fundamentally redefine our reach into the cosmos and our understanding of our own planetary backyard. It's a fascinating landscape.
And what's really illuminating here is how these policy shifts reflect different philosophies, you know, ideas about growth, regulation, the role of science in shaping the nation's future.
It's not just what's changing, but why, right? How different groups are balancing these competing interests.
Exactly. We're seeing this realignment of priorities with implications way beyond the headlines.
Before we dive deep, just a quick note. You can follow meteorologist Rob Jones for more insights on what's happening in our atmosphere and beyond. Find him on Instagram, that's meteorologist.
And on TikTok is TV meteorologist.
Yep. And over on YouTube, follow Rob Jones Hurricane. That's also where you'll find the Meteorology Matters podcast playlist. Okay, let's launch quite literally into our first big topic, the shifting ground for commercial space operations. Mm-hmm. We've seen this recent executive order from President Trump. The aim seems pretty clear. Significantly ease regulations for commercial rocket launches and also spaceport development.
Yeah, this isn't just tweaking things around the edges.
Yeah.
It feels like a fundamental rethink of how the U.S. approaches space commerce, a real shift towards faster expansion.
Absolutely. This executive order, it's pretty sweeping in its intent to streamline things and, well, cut what the administration sees as red tape.
Right. Specifically, it calls for either eliminating altogether or significantly speeding up the environmental reviews that used to be mandatory for rocket launches.
And those reviews, they're usually pretty detailed, aren't they, under laws like NEPA?
Exactly. The National Environmental Policy Act. They mandate looking really closely at potential impacts on local ecosystems, wildlife, air quality, even community noise. So speeding those up or removing them, that's a big change.
And it goes beyond just the launch itself.
Oh, yeah. The order also looks at exempting launch vehicles from certain federal licensing rules, maybe even getting rid of some that were there for safety and oversight. And it doesn't stop there. It explicitly wants to evaluate state and local restrictions on actually building spaceports.
Ah, the infrastructure on the ground.
Right. And speed up the environmental and administrative reviews needed for that infrastructure. Sure. Launch pads, control centers, fuel facilities, all of it.
So the whole process from the ground up.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Trying to make the whole thing faster, less cumbersome, and, well, from their perspective, more efficient.
And the administration's reason for this pretty aggressive move, it's laid out really clearly in the order itself.
Yeah, what does it say exactly?
It says, ensuring that United States operators can efficiently launch, conduct missions in space, and re-enter United States airspace is critical to economic growth, national security, and accomplishing federal space objectives.
Pretty unambiguous language there, bolstering the nation's capabilities. It's standing in commercial space globally.
Definitely. And it even sets this, well, almost audacious goal to substantially increase commercial launches and encourage novel space activities by the end of the decade.
So not just keeping pace, but accelerating dramatically.
Right.
Positioning the U.S. as the leader.
Right. When you look at that rationale, it's clear the vision is for commercial space to be, well, increasingly dominant in the nation's space efforts.
Mm. And easing these regulations is aimed right at clearing hurdles to rapid expansion and innovation in that sector.
Creating an environment for private companies to move faster, be more agile.
Theoretically leading to more launches, more development, a stronger commercial space economy. It reflects that philosophy, you know. Prioritizing growth and security through unburdened expansion in space.
Viewing regulations more as obstacles than safeguards, perhaps.
That seems to be the underlying message, yeah. Speed and scale are key.
Speaking of major players, it's pretty hard not to mention that this order is likely to boost Elon Musk's SpaceX.
Yeah, they're huge. One of the biggest, most active players out there.
I mean, the scale is immense. They've already done over 100 launches just this year.
Over 100. That kind of activity makes them an immediate, very clear beneficiary of any policy easing launch regulations. It's a big advantage.
It's undeniably true that SpaceX stands to gain massively given their volume and, you know, their future plans.
But what's kind of interesting here, it adds a layer of complexity, is the relationship described between President Trump and Elon Musk. It's apparently been quite tense recently, even though this policy benefits SpaceX.
Oh, really? How so?
Well, their interactions haven't always been smooth sailing. Musk apparently put, what, at least $250 million into supporting Trump's 2024 campaign.
Right.
And he even joined the administration briefly for about 4 months, heading up this new Department of Government Efficiency.
Yes, that controversial cost-cutting effort.
Exactly. Controversial, aimed at cutting perceived waste. But reports suggest that role weighed heavily on Musk and his company's reputations, drew a lot of criticism. Mm. Then, not long after he left in May, there was this public feud between him and Trump over some bill the president called a big, beautiful bill.
A public feud.
Apparently so. The sources mention it devolved into personal attacks, disagreements. And then Musk announced he was launching a third political party, kind of out of the blue.
Wow. So the policy helps SpaceX, but the personal dynamic between Trump and Musk is complicated.
Very complicated. It adds this surprising layer to understanding the motivations and who benefits. It seems business interests and maybe political expediency can outweigh personal feelings sometimes.
As you'd expect, a move like this, streamlining environmental oversight for space commerce, it didn't go unnoticed by environmental groups.
That's definitely not.
Advocates were immediately wary, expressing strong opposition pretty much instantly. The Center for Biological Diversity, for instance, called the order reckless.
So what are their main worries?
Their core argument, put very forcefully, is that rockets, just by their nature, often explode and wreak devastation on surrounding areas.
Right, the inherent risks involved.
Which, they argue, puts people and wildlife at risk. They point to things like sonic booms, potential chemical spills from fuel, habitat destruction, new launch sites.
Like down at SpaceX's Starbase in Texas. It's near sensitive ecosystems, endangered species habitats. Mm. More launches with less review could really impact those areas.
Exactly. Jared Margolis, a senior attorney at the center, didn't hold back. He said, bending the knee to powerful corporations by allowing federal agencies to ignore bedrock environmental laws is incredibly dangerous and puts all of us in harm's way.
Strong words.
And he concluded, pretty emphatically, this is clearly not in the public interest. It highlights this fundamental tension, doesn't it?
Absolutely. On one side, the administration's goals, economic growth, national security, rapid space expansion.
And on the other, these serious concerns about ecological risks, human risks, with fewer safeguards.
It forces that question.
Yeah.
How do you weigh rapid expansion and tech advancement against environmental protection and public safety? It's
sure.
A tough balancing act.
With potentially long-lasting consequences. Okay, so from reaching for the stars, let's bring our focus back down to Earth, specifically to the Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA. We're seeing a very distinct philosophy emerge there now. Critics have widely called it an embrace of climate change denial, as it seems to be actively working to dismantle existing climate regulations.
It's a profound redirection for an agency traditionally tasked with protecting the environment.
Indeed. And the central action here, maybe the most consequential, is EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin's proposal to repeal the 2009 endangerment finding.
Okay, unpack that finding for us. What was its significance?
Well, it was established under the Obama administration, a really critical legal determination under the Clean Air Act. It declared that planet-warming gases, CO2, methane, others are a direct threat to public health and welfare.
So more than just stating the science, it was the legal foundation.
Exactly. The legal basis for a whole range of climate regs on industries like cars, power plants, industrial facilities. Without it, the EPA's legal power to regulate those greenhouse gases is, well, severely weakened or even gone.
And Zeldin has publicly confirmed this plan.
Yes. He told Newsmax the EPA sent a proposed rule to the Office of Management and Budget specifically to repeal that 2009 finding.
Wow.
What's also really notable and drawing a lot of fire from scientists are his public comments about carbon dioxide itself. He explicitly said CO2 is necessary for life.
Contrasting it with the view of it as a pollutant when it's in excess.
Right. He argued, quote, many on the left will say carbon dioxide is a pollutant, and they won't talk about all of the many reasons why carbon dioxide is actually necessary for life here on our planet.
That framing, redefining the issue, seems central to their whole approach now.
Absolutely. And this shift, especially on something as basic as CO2, brings us to a major point of conflict, the scientific community's reaction.
Which has been strong, I gather.
Very strong and immediate. There's this stark contrast between the agency's new line and the long-established scientific consensus.
The criticisms have been swift, yes.
Yeah.
And pretty blunt.
Extremely blunt. Robert Brühl from Brown University, who studies climate denial, flat out called Zeldin's actions and comments climate denial.
Wow.
He said, yes, he's a full-fledged climate denier.
Wow, okay.
He called the assertions that greenhouse gases like CO2 aren't dangerous, irrational, and unscientific. He even used this analogy, saying, it's almost as if the Catholic Church is just wishing away Galileo, adding, the science is there, you can see it, it's proven, it's fact.
A powerful comparison.
And he pointed out that this specific argument that CO2 is needed for life, so it can't be bad, is an old staple of the climate denial movement dating back to the 90s.
So recycling old talking points, essentially. What about other experts?
Robert Howarth at Cornell University reinforced the scientific nuance. He agreed CO2 is essential for photosynthesis, like water is essential for life.
But too much of a good thing can be bad.
Exactly. He said, there are lots of things which are essential for life, but when they become in excess or damaging pollutants, it's not an either or. He stressed the science on CO2's climate impact is settled, known for over 150 years.
Going back to the 19th century, foundational research.
Right. And Jonathan Overpeck at the University of Michigan called denying climate change as a problem crazy. He pointed to the observable impacts we're already seeing.
More frequent, more severe extremes.
Exactly. Heat waves, droughts, extreme rainfall, flooding, all supercharged by climate change caused by emissions of CO2 and other greenhouse gases.
So the collective expert feedback paints a really clear picture of scientific consensus standing in stark opposition to the EPA's position now.
It's a profound battle over the definition of pollutant and the role of science in policy. And it's clear this isn't just about weakening regulations.
Right. It seems to be about eliminating them entirely, which is a big escalation from previous approaches.
That's a key distinction. Looking back at the first Trump administration, they rolled back a lot of environmental rules, sure, but generally left some form of regulation in place.
They didn't remove the endangerment finding itself, even though EPA had Pruitt publicly downplayed CO2's role back then.
Exactly. But now the stated goal seems to be getting rid of regulations completely. That's much more radical.
Including proposals to eliminate all climate rules for power plants.
Yes. Based on an argument in a draft rule that their emissions do not contribute significantly to dangerous air pollution, which, you know, contradicts decades of science on cumulative impacts.
Joe Goffman, who led the EPA's air office under Biden, called this approach nihilistic.
Yeah, he described it as a pure all-or-nothing proposition, suggesting the aim is to remove the agency's authority to regulate tailpipe emissions entirely. Huge implications there.
And Goffman felt removing regulations altogether would be far worse than just weakening them.
A profound strategic shift. And bringing in the global context, Jonathan Overpeck made that critical point about the U.S. role.
Right, about emissions mattering globally.
He said, we're the number two emitter of carbon dioxide behind China, and we have been the number one historical emitter. Cutting U.S. emissions is crucial for tackling the global problem. To say the U.S. isn't a major contributor.
He called it just crazy talk. It highlights how these domestic shifts have massive international implications.
Which brings us to another really significant area seeing major changes. Federally mandated climate research. Let's start with the National Climate Assessment.
Ah, yes, the NCA.
Ah.
That's not a small thing. It's a huge congressionally mandated effort.
Designed to keep the nation informed about climate impacts, vulnerabilities, adaptation strategies, a cornerstone of our understanding.
And this is where we saw something really surprising and, frankly, alarming to many scientists.
What happened exactly?
All the scientists working on the 6th National Climate Assessment, hundreds of them, mostly volunteers, got an email dismissing them. Just like that.
Dismissing them?
Yeah. The email just said the assessment's scope is currently being reevaluated. NASA and White House officials confirmed this reevaluation, but gave no further details.
So hundreds of volunteer experts, their work just paused or ended, disrupting years of effort.
Exactly. So what does this actually mean for people, for communities across the U.S., especially those already facing climate impacts?
It means a lot because this report, mandated way back in 1990, isn't just academic. It provides crucial, detailed, U.S.-specific assessments, broken down by region.
Making it actionable, right?
That's what Rachel Cletus, an expert working on the report, stressed. It provides information about climate impacts at a local and regional level so that it's actionable for people. Think sea level rise projections, ag yield changes, heat risks, water availability.
Data that communities, especially those without their own big research teams, really rely on to make plans.
Without it, they'll struggle hugely to translate the science into practical plans for preparedness, for resilience.
Cletus issued a pretty stark warning about that.
She did. She said, lives will be lost. There will be harm caused by removing access to this federally funded comprehensive scientific report.
That's not hyperbole. It's about concrete consequences lacking data for building codes, infrastructure design, heat wave plans, water management.
Crystal Raymond, another scientist dismissed from the project, added it's a vital tool for communicating complex science broadly to communities, state, and local governments, the public.
And she felt this move showed a lack of interest from the administration in getting that critical info out to people who need it.
And while maybe not a total shock, given past moves like canceled contracts or firings in the first term,
this feels like an escalation.
Definitely. Mm. The fourth NCA was published, even if quietly, the day after Thanksgiving 2018. This action pauses the next one, actively hindering the flow of updated science.
It signals this profound disengagement from the scientific process itself.
Okay, next up. How are these ships hitting NASA, our National Aeronautics and Space Agency? Their longstanding mission seems to be undergoing a pretty significant reevaluation, too.
That's right. Acting NASA Administrator Sean Duffy made some very explicit comments. He stated that climate and earth science at NASA will essentially move aside.
Move aside. For what?
To refocus solely on space exploration. He told Fox Business, quote, all the climate science and all of the other priorities that the last administration had at NASA were going to move aside. And all of the science that we do is going to be directed towards exploration, which is the mission of NASA.
And he doubled down on that.
Yeah, adding, that's why we have NASA, is to explore, not to do all of these earth sciences. That's a remarkably direct statement about a fundamental shift.
And it's important to remember NASA's history here, right? It's always been aeronautics and space.
Exactly. A dual mission, exploring air and space. For decades, they've done extensive science on both Earth and space. Their Earth Science Division runs satellites monitoring sea levels, ice melt, atmospheric composition, forests, rainfall, everything.
Foundational data for understanding climate change. Missions like GRACE, tracking water mass, AQUA and TERRA, looking at clouds, temperature, land cover.
Absolutely. This proposed pivot is a huge change to that long-standing dual mission, which has given us so much unbiased public data about our own planet.
And this shift aligns with the broader efforts to downplay climate impacts, dismantle research.
And it connects back to our first topic. It comes just as the administration is also trying to cut environmental reviews for the space industry.
So it feels like part of a cohesive strategy, reorienting federal science away from Earth-centric research.
Yeah, it does.
Finally, let's talk about potential budget cuts at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA, another key agency for climate and weather research.
And the proposed changes in recent budget documents look, well, pretty drastic. If they happened, they could severely impair our ability to monitor, understand, predict environmental stuff.
What kind of cuts are we talking about?
A new budget document outlines proposals to completely zero out funding for several critical areas in NOAA.
Zero out? Like eliminate funding entirely?
That's what's proposed. For NOAA's climate labs, for regional climate data and information programs, the ones collecting and sharing vital climate data.
Wow. And does it stop at climate research?
No. The document also targets NOAA's weather research program, its weather labs, even its crucial tornado and severe storm research, which is fundamental for safety in the U.S. heartland.
So basic weather forecasting research could be hit, too.
It seems so. And it goes further, proposing the actual shutdown of specific critical labs.
Which ones?
For example, the lab at Mauna Loa in Hawaii. That's world famous for its long-term tracking of atmospheric greenhouse gases, especially CO2. It provides the Keeling Curve data, over 60 years of continuous CO2 record. Irrefutable measure of climate change.
Cutting that off would be huge.
Huge. Another lab slated for shutdown is in Miami, Florida. Their research includes vital hurricane studies, storm surge modeling, intensity prediction, absolutely critical with storms intensifying in the Atlantic and the Gulf of Mexico.
These aren't just abstract research centers, they're foundational infrastructure.
Exactly. Providing data and forecast impacting everything from farming to disaster prep. And on top of the program cuts.
Staffing cuts too.
Significant ones proposed. A reduction of 2,061 full-time staff at NOAA. That's a 17% cut compared to fiscal 2024.
17%. That's massive.
It is. And while administration budgets are often just starting points for Congress, this one feels different because of that Department of Government efficiency.
Right. The one focused on cutting staff in areas not aligned with current priorities.
Exactly. It suggests a strong, deliberate intent behind these proposed cuts, more than just a budget placeholder. It looks like a strategic effort to really diminish climate and environmental research capacity in the federal government.
Okay, this brings us to a really critical point. How do all these seemingly separate policies, easing space regs, accelerating commercial launches, fundamentally altering climate research, dismantling scientific assessments, slashing agency budgets, how do they all fit together?
Yeah, at first glance, they might seem disparate. But when you step back,
there seems to be an underlying coherence, doesn't there?
I think so. If you connect the dots, you see this overarching, quite deliberate theme of deregulation and a major reprioritization of federal scientific and environmental efforts.
So on one hand,
an emphasis on rapid commercial expansion in space, pushing forward, reducing obstacles, potentially at the expense of environmental review, valuing growth and exploration, perhaps over safeguards.
An acceleration. And on the other hand,
a deliberate downscaling, even dismantling, of climate-related research and regulatory power in agencies like EPA, NASA, NOAA. A deceleration, pulling back from established science and protection, often redefining basic concepts.
So it's not just random changes. It feels like a strategic redirection of federal resources and focus.
Right. It implicitly suggests that prosperity and national strength are best achieved by unlocking new economic frontiers and pursuing big tech feats, rather than, say, safeguarding and deepening our understanding of existing environmental challenges.
Which really raises that big question for you, the listener. What does this mean for our collective ability to understand and prepare for challenges from things like rocket launches and the broader issue of climate change?
Yeah, how do these shifts affect the availability of actionable data for communities needing to adapt? Or the scientific basis for future policy decisions? Are we choosing comprehensive planetary understanding or dramatically narrowing our focus?
And it's crucial to remember, throughout this, we're just presenting these developments as they've been reported, highlighting the different arguments and concerns from various sides.
Absolutely. Our goal here on Meteorology Matters is simply to convey the ideas and propose changes, let you form your own understanding. We're not taking sides.
You need to hear these different perspectives directly.
Exactly. These shifts show fundamentally different views on government's role, the balance between growth and environmental protection, even how scientific consensus should inform policy.
We've heard arguments for efficiency, for exploring new frontiers.
And at the same time, strong warnings from experts about potentially reckless actions, about losing vital scientific information built up over decades.
We just want to lay out these contrasting views so you see the full scope, understand the stakes involved.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? It means a changing landscape for how our nation tackles critical scientific and environmental challenges.
It's about understanding the powerful forces at play shaping our future, from the rockets overhead to the air we breathe, the climate defining our home.
These aren't isolated decisions. They're interconnected threads weaving into the fabric of our national direction, our ability to navigate the coming decades.
This raises an important question. As we think about all this, maybe the ultimate question is, when does pursuing new frontiers risk undermining the understanding of the very home we're leaving behind?
And how do we really measure progress if the scales seem to be tilting away from essential planetary knowledge? Food for thought.
Thank you for joining us on this critical Meteorology Matters discussion. We hope this brought some clarity to these significant shifts. Remember, follow meteorologist Rob Jones for more insights. He's on Instagram as Meteorologist.
On TikTok as TV Meteorologist.
And on YouTube, follow Rob Jones Hurricane, where you can also find the Meteorology Matters podcast playlist. Stay curious, stay informed, and we'll be back soon with another vital discussion.